Good afternoon, friends and traders. Welcome to the Limit Up Podcast slash recap. And we got the new crew in here. I'm Dan Hodgman, sitting down with Jack and Hoke. How are you guys?
I'm good, man. I'm honored to be invited. This is wonderful.
Honored. Love it. Oh, we were just talking beforehand. Hoke has got his rally sweater on, and it certainly delivered today, didn't it?
Yeah. I told everybody this morning, I'm doing my part. The rally sweater is on, stayed on all day, even though it's 80 degrees outside.
Oof. I'm liking the rally right now. My portfolio likes the rally, so I'm taking it. I'm not going to complain. So, Hoke, break it down. What happened in the markets a little bit today?
All right. Well, kind of focusing more on the S&Ps and the NASDAQ. We had a pretty big boost in open interest yesterday on that breakout above that falling triangle pattern in the S&Ps. I'm more focused on the S&Ps than I am the NASDAQ. As most of you know, the NASDAQ gives me heart palpitations. So this morning, looking at where we were opening, and you know that we had two distributions of time and volume in both the S&P and the NASDAQ. My thought was, if we can't take out the overnight low in either of them, I'm long all day. And it proved to be true. The NASDAQ never even got near the overnight low, and the S&Ps traded to the overnight low right before the open. The market opened, it kind of weenied around for a while. And once the direction was chosen, it went right basically to, guess where, weekly kickoff high, 41.94.50. There were three bars that could not close above it. The market came all the way back down to, guess where, value area low, turned around, and we just took out the highs and put in a nice late spike for us for tomorrow morning. I'm going to be very interested to see where this market opens tomorrow, and also check what kind of open interest we added. Volume yesterday was good. We added open interest. That's healthy for the upside auction. If we added more open interest and volume was strong again today, healthy for the upside auction. We'll have to see what happens. And of course, and we all know, if something goes wrong with this debt ceiling thing, it could all come tumbling down. Anything can happen.
Yeah, speaking of ceilings, the ES is sitting. We're at a really interesting level right now. Just going back, this 4,200 area, that area right around there, man, going back, we've had, going back to the spike on September of 22, we've had like 6 attempts at this, haven't been able to rally past it yet. I'll be super interested to see what happens next with this on my chart. This is right at the convergence. I was joking yesterday at the Band of Traders thing. It's like crossing the streams in Ghostbusters. You have this upward thing going to it, and the debt ceiling is going to take it. Either way, I feel like that's the end of this pattern almost, is if the debt ceiling gets resolved, we're going to push higher. If not, who knows how low, because we haven't done that in our 200 plus years of existence of a country. So we'll have to see what happens.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, that's the stuff we got to be paying attention to. And the funny thing is you guys grew up in this. We've been around this industry for a while. You go back, what did everyone always say? Summer, don't really expect much. Ranges get tighter. Volatility kind of dries up a little bit. And I feel like the last 5 or 6 years, we've gone into summer going, oh my gosh, there's a lot can happen. There's a lot going on right now, you know. Don't think summer is going to be very quiet. I think the same thing setting up right now. I think we're setting up for another interesting, I'm going to use the word interesting, summer ahead of us.
Yeah.
Don't forget challenging.
In the comments, Will R. says, Hogue, that John told us about a great trade he had on and I didn't listen. This reminds me of the expression, you can lead a jackass to water, but you can't make him drink it. So better luck next time.
Well, I just, hope the day wasn't too bad.
No, if the trend was your friend, Dan, you were saying on the XFA that our traders are doing really well today.
Had a great day. I mean, I'm just looking over at the funded accounts here. Shang up 12,000, excuse me. Jose's up 11,000. Amar's up 10,000. Peter's up 10,000. I mean, we got some big names on the board, big P&Ls. So I think this ties in really well to today's topic.
That was the same transition I was going to make, and
beat you to it, Jack.
Hope some of those people are listening, because, well, first off, just an aside, I love to see on a strong trend day like this that people are going with it, right? It can go either way, where I'm kind of impressed, because a lot of times when we see a strong, persistent move to the upside or downside, we see a lot of people trying to jump in front of that bulldozer, but not so much today. So that's great. So Dan, now we can fully transition to what is it we're talking about today?
Setting expectations for your trading.
Yes. And that might sound broad, but specifically we're talking about producer Holden, a good point. He saw a TikTok, because he's younger than me, the other day. It was talking about
someone called me old the other day.
Yeah. Well, you are, just not compared to me.
Hey, hold my beer.
Hey, I'm supposed to be nice to the elderly. So anyway, some TikTok of someone who made $70,000 in a day and then went the TikTok. First off, I think that if you make your first reaction, if you have a big trading day, shouldn't be to go to TikTok probably and just say it. Weren't a lot of people, you know, only Facebook was around when I was trading professionally or stuff like that, but would be uncouth to post how much you made. Oftentimes it might be trying to sell you something. So whether this person took 100 ES contracts for 14 ticks remains to be seen. I'd love to know their strategy. But we were thinking about more realistic things, because obviously we're never going to promise anyone they can make 70 grand in a day. Great if you do. But how to kind of look objectively at your past trading and kind of set your expectations for the future. So, Hogue, when you were trading as a career or otherwise, what was your feeling of expectations? Were you completely in the moment, or were you kind of working towards certain goals that you laid out based on your past performance?
Well, when I first started, I thought like everybody else, I was going to make millions of dollars and live a rock and roll lifestyle. It didn't take too long to figure out that that was not a reasonable expectation. So I kind of lowered those expectations and started setting goals, financial and time-based goals, which ended up actually having the opposite reaction. So I stopped making I'm going to make 15,000 this week. And if I don't, then I feel like a failure. So I stopped doing that. My expectation now is finish the day better than I started. I don't remember the last time I had a $12,000 day, but I can make $1,000 most out of 12 days.
Yeah,
that is a reasonable expectation for me.
That's a really good way to frame it, because I think we sometimes fall into it too. There's this, I hear this all the time of, oh, if you can make $500 a day, that's, you know, six figures a year in trading. Well, sure, but that's ridiculous. I mean, you're not going to make, that needs to be your average for the day, right?
Right.
When you count on your losers and stuff like that, if you want to make $500 a day, you probably got to be making $1,500 on your winning days and then taking the losses from time to time. And it does a disservice to people, because if you think that way, you get, I don't know, just messes with your head. Dan, you got, what about you?
Well, I think there's a couple things I like to think about when it comes to trading. And first off, right now, trading is not my number one priority in life. I have this job too. You know, I've got a balance. So I'm fortunate. I got two things going. But when trading was sole income, like Hogue said, and I think like anyone that gets into this industry, you have this notion that, you know, Gordon Gekko's and, you know, you're going to be $1 million trader a year. And that's just the expectation. And so like anyone, I came in thinking, sure, I'm going to make millions of dollars. This is going to be easy. This is going to be great. Quickly realized it's not the case. What I learned to do for myself, and this is kind of how I look at it to this day, my expectations are my bar is really, really low on what I expect to make trading. I know what I want trading to cover, the expense that trading is set to cover. As a trader, it was how cheap can I live to be comfortable in the month, pay my rent, you know, pay the mortgage, you know, the car payment I need, transportation to and from work, and put food on the table. If I could cover those things with my trading, I was doing really, really, really good. And then that made me, you know, not stress about hitting that $10,000 week or that $50,000 month or the $100,000. Like, none of that really mattered to me because I just knew how much I had to make after taxing, after everything was said and done, desk fees were paid. Like, I knew what I had to do. And I kept my bar really, really low. To this day, I keep my bar really, really low. So what I do now, I look at my last year's results and I typically cut them almost in half and go, okay, if I can get to half of what I did last year, we're off to a good start. Because I'm not stretching. I'm not reaching for things. Yeah, I do take risk. I press my luck. Don't get me wrong. Do I want to make more than I made last year every year? 1,000%. But that's not the expectation. I think there is expectations of what I'm going to get out of this to protect myself, to cover what I need. And everything else on top of that's going to be gravy.
Kind of reminds me of something my dear old dad said. Being wealthy isn't about how much you have. It's about how little you need.
That's so profound. I'm sad that I raised my hand and hit my mic stand right as you said it. So no, that is good. I think that, well, here's the way I look at it. Well, the most successful hedge fund pretty much ever is probably Renaissance, right? And they've returned something like 30% a year. That kind of gives you a good idea for what is really possible as far as increasing your capital, unless you're taking outrageous risks. I know we like to see when, you know, you like the guy that had the 100,000 shares of GameStop. Like, that's crazy, right? That's awesome. Good for him. The reason we're so fascinated by it is because that's incredibly rare. He's the one guy in the world that did it, right? Is if you look at what you did last year or how much risk capital you're starting with, increasing it by 30% is really, really good. And in all likelihood, if you're going out with the goal that, and we see this a lot, that you're going to double, triple, 10x your money every year, if you do, it's probably luck. And by the nature of day trading, you're incredibly unlikely to get that lucky because you're not just taking one position and letting it ride like a lottery ticket, right? When you get lottery returns, necessarily a huge percentage of the time, you lose everything. That's kind of how it goes. So back when I was trading professionally, I would look at what I made the year before, tinker with a few things, think about what I'm going to do differently, and then be like, wow, if I could get here, if I could just improve on this a little bit, I wish I was Zen as Dan and be like, half it'd be good. But I was relying on for my income at that point, so that wouldn't be good enough.
That's the perks of nowadays. I have multiple income streams. My trading doesn't have to be perfect. Back in the day, it's a whole different story. I got to see growth annually.
Yeah, and if I had seen, and that's where the expectations can make you feel like a failure, because if I saw, even if relatively modest, if I said I wanted to make 20% more each year, I mean, if I hit that, you know, I like you guys very much, but I wouldn't be sitting here right now. I'd be on an island, my island, perhaps. I mean, that's the compounding it. If you're always improving like that, it's very rare that you see something like that. And that's why we kind of have these folk stories about, you know, all the popular traders who are, yeah, go ahead.
Looking good, Lewis.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's, you know, another one of my dad's things. You were just saying, Jack, you know, you can make a lot of money. Hard part is keeping it. There was, you know, dad was like, yeah, you can make money relatively easily. You can lose money very easily. The toughest part of this is keeping it.
Exactly.
I mean, that's the thing I see the most with traders is, you know, they'll have the big day. They'll put it up. And then the next day it's gone and I think that's part of the expectation too, right? It's like, do my expectations change because we talked about this in Coach's Playbook, you know, do my expectations change because all of a sudden I had a good day? No, they should not. You got to put that in the past, you know, forget about it. What'd you do right? Well, what'd you do poorly? You learn, you educate yourself. But that P&L, no one cares. The market does not care what you did yesterday or what you're doing right now. All the market's going to do is what the market wants to do. And you need to find a way to trade inside of that and protect yourself and protect your bottom side or downside and protect your risk and lock in the profit when you're in profit and you have that plan. I think, like, John, you made the comment, like, I remember you telling the story about you had, like, and you correct me if I'm wrong, but it was like your goal was like make 100 ticks. And if you didn't get the 100 ticks, you got to 99. You wanted that last one. Those were the days you struggled, right? Like, be okay with fluctuating on those levels. You don't have to hit. If you're saying, like, you know, I want to be $1,000 a day trader over time. If you're at 900 or you've had a day and you've just kind of grinded out that few hundred dollars, like, there is nothing wrong with stopping in the green, because you stop in the green, you're probably better than 90% of people out there today.
And trading goals, trading levels, trading anything is not an exact science. If you're close, you're good.
And I understand.
Like, we talked about the 10% rule. Like, if you're within 10% of a profit target, take it and run.
Yeah. And I know sometimes too, I mean, we do shout outs for funded traders like we did earlier that they were doing really well. I think that we could do a better job sometimes of, like, and I know we've been asked this too, we're just trying to get more of the stats of finding other ways to congratulate people for good trading activity that involves consistency. It's just, we're looking at the risk board or whatever else, and it's easier to see those. But, you know, it's, I'm trying to figure out the right way to say this. It's like we talked about last week, I forget what on Hogue is, you can be happy and celebrate a win. And if anything, people are too hard on their losses, is what we talked about last time. But it can turn on a dime. And also, it's never, it is another good piece of, like, I think life advice. It's never too late to F that up, so to speak. Right. I mean, I knew someone who was a very good trader, and then they lost $2 million in a night, one night. Or what's another recent example? Oh, think about, like, Sam Bankman-Fried or whatever, who's not only lost $16 billion, but it's also likely going to jail. So you never get too big to sort of ruin things with expectations.
That was pretty deep, Jack. You know, you're never too big to fail in trading. You could kind of look at it that way. Like, you know, trading is such a unique space. And I think the most important thing when it comes to having an expectation in trading is don't expect to be getting paid regularly. You're not getting paid to sit down, you know, if you're working 40 hours a week, you shouldn't expect to get paid for 40 hours that week. There are weeks and maybe longer that you're not getting paid. And you can't just sit there and keep clicking the mouse and taking trades thinking I gotta get paid. That's a mentality you can't have in this. And that's gotta be part of, you know, again, that expectation is being realistic with yourself. This is looking at it on a quarterly basis or a monthly basis, not on a daily thing. You know, trust me, if I sat down and worked for 10 hours in a day, you know, at a normal job, and I'm not getting paid for that time, and it's up in the air if I'm actually going to get paid or not. Like, yeah, that's not fun. You know, you want to get paid. I get it. But trading is not that industry. And understanding that is really, really important.
That was the hardest part of the trading as a career for me, is that the actual work you do almost is very much like the rules we say for trading, talking about adding to winners and following momentum, following the trend, is that I was very much programmed where, you know, I wanted to work for the same general amount a day and kind of put in a constant effort. One thing I noticed of the people that were doing really well is that when they were doing well, they would just burn the midnight oil, right? It was almost like they were treating their life as a momentum trade, things are working, instead of being like, okay, we're done for the day, they would just kind of keep on pushing and pushing and then pull back when things weren't working. And then that's when they would be, you know, it wouldn't matter what the night is. They'd be in there on Thanksgiving evening. I'm sure you've seen some of this too, Dan. Markets reopen on Thanksgiving. Never once in my trading career was I like, because we had to be, there was no remote trading there. You had to be in the office. Never once would I even consider being in there on Christmas Eve or Thanksgiving night or something like that. But the people that were the real, yeah.
Had no choice. My dad, I worked for my dad for quite a while. And he always told me, he's like, you don't take time off. Our job, we work. And like that, it's not that we were working, but you were there. If something happened, you could take advantage of it. And we found, and I learned through him, like we found a lot of opportunity in those off times to find a good trade, to find a good position, because we were there. And that I think the difference that it took me really long time to figure out was, just because I'm there doesn't mean I have to trade. But I'm there because if something happens, then I can take advantage of a move. A lot of guys, Jack, you talk about it, like a lot of guys were like, well, you know, I had a good morning. I'm out for the rest of the day. It's 10 o'clock. You know, the numbers came out. I had a good trade, you know, made some money. I'm going to play golf. Where like I wanted to be that guy, but I wasn't allowed to be. I had the boss yelling at me. Nope, you're here. You know, markets close at 2. You're staying. And I wanted to leave. And I wanted to go play golf.
You got to think about some of the smaller traders, you know, that were around at that time. Were probably looking forward to the holidays, because some of the bigger, you know, more successful traders were taking that time off. I can imagine seeing their faces when you and your dad walked in.
Christmas Eve. And I started working for my dad. The first time I started working for him as a full trader, I was 19 or 20. I can't quite remember. And I remember Christmas Eve. I remember Christmas Eve morning, or like the night before. And I was staying at my parents, and my dad that night comes up to me and goes, what are you doing tonight? It's like, hang out, stay up, watch TV. I don't know. He's like, well, we're leaving at 4:30 in the morning. I go, what? It's Christmas Eve. He goes, markets are open. I go, we have to go in to work on Christmas Eve? He's, yeah, half day, we're going. And we would go in, and I could tell you, I worked probably 7 Christmas Eves, maybe 6 Christmas Eves. Didn't take many trades on them. Didn't do much on them, but the ones that we did worked out great. Because we were there, and especially in the pit, Hoag, you remember those days. I mean, if an option, you know, something comes into the pit, an opportunity presents it, and no one else is there. And usually there are people kind of dumping positions coming into the end of year, you know, people are trying to just get anything out. And instead of getting filled on 50, we'd get filled on 500. And all of a sudden I got this, we would look at him like, this is free money. Sold. I'll take 500 all day. And they go, I got another 500. Sold. I'll take another 500. And then we go and we get out of that position really quickly. We'd find ways to maneuver it. Like there was opportunity to be had strictly because we got up at 4 and we went into work. And that was the difference that I was taught at a young age in this industry, is like, you just have to be there. You don't have to do anything, but if you're there, something may present itself, but it's a matter of being smart. And just because you're watching the dome move and the charts are up and down, just because that's happening doesn't mean there's a trade there. So it's like being present, but also being kind of controlling your actions.
What gave you your work ethic? Working on Christmas Eve.
Christmas Eve, Thanksgiving nights, Sunday evenings. You know, we had our rotation, who was working Sunday nights at 5 o'clock on the, because being a treasury trader, China impacted that 5 o'clock open pretty aggressively.
We had the manager's position. Yeah, there was nothing more miserable. I think the low point of my first year of trading was like coming into the office at 5 p.m. on a Sunday to watch the Super Bowl while we were just managing treasury positions. It was like, man, I messed up this one, didn't I? But I guess this, I guess that all goes into like what your expectations are. If that's what you're doing, the expectations got to be high. That's, I mean, to bring it back to our thing, that's a large reason of why I left that particular industry, is that the reward's got to be really good to live that lifestyle. God help us if they go to like 24 hours a day, but like the treasury future markets, like we were doing, they're open 22 plus hours a day. So there was, the weekends were often nice, but it was in between. It was just like, oh God, what? And the calls in the middle of the night, just because they never call you. I'll give you some about nighttime calls. They never call you with like, here's some good news.
Yes, right.
Everything's great. Just want to let you know. Good night. No, it's always you need
to get in here now.
Yeah, you need to get in here now or tell me to puke this all because you're down about as much as you're allowed to be. And thankfully, I would assume most of you out there, if that changes what your expectation is, right? If that's gonna be the lifestyle, you need a certain level of thing versus if you're kind of taking a few trades a day and stuff like that and are just trying to make a little bit more, I think that's a more comfortable way to do it.
I mean, Hoag, you didn't miss a day. You still don't take days off. I mean, you're always sitting there, but I've watched Hoag trade. He's not in and out just because the market's moving. You're there.
Yeah. Every day. That's something I got from my dad too. You know, he was on the grain floor for 40 years and we took a lot of vacations without him because he didn't want to miss the time on the floor. You know, we'd get there, he'd come 3 days later and leave 2 days after that to go back to work. Because, you know, that's what you do. I mean, that's the work ethic it takes and it took. So, you know, I love what I do here. I love the opportunities that the market affords us. I don't even feel most days like I'm even working. It's like what I would be doing if I didn't make money at it. But my dad said the same thing. You know, he said he loved the floor. He loved the action, loved the people. He would be going down there even if he wasn't trading. So, I'm taking some time off in June and maybe a little time in July. You know, Donna's going to be off of work for 2 months. So we take a little time off and I get my time. But if I'm staying home and I'm not working, I'm probably watching and trading.
And I will say like something, you know, for anyone out there that has a hard time with that balance of like, if I'm here, I should be doing something. My biggest takeaway that I have learned for myself since leaving the professional side of this and being on the retail side is not letting trading become the ball and chain in a sense. Like you don't have to, you're flat, take advantage of being flat. Like if you're stressed, you don't have to do anything. You know, the pressures, obviously we're all going to have the pressures and we would have the desire to make money. But allow yourself, put that into your expectations, allow yourself not to be present at 22, 23 hours a day. I mean, step away, get out for a little bit, go take a breather, take a couple of days off, make it a long weekend.
Take advantage of the fact that you're not paying $12,000 a month in desk fees or something.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? It's like for most of you guys out there, it's your, cost of operation isn't super high. It's the money that you're going to make or lose is from the actual trading. So use that to your advantage. You're not getting, because that's the thing too. If you're at a prop firm, like Dan said, it's like the firm is Dan's dad to you, where you're going to have desk fees.
I paid him desk fees.
Yeah.
I paid my desk fees.
I have paid many a dollar to the CME. They should be nice to me. The CME and then all sorts of things go into the desk fees. Absolutely. So anyway, we got a little bit off topic there, but hopefully somebody out there found this somewhat interesting. But it was good talking to you guys again.
It's good to be with you.
Will R. mentions the series Liquid Breakfast Time. Yep. Yeah.
I had that a few times.
Well, that was the great thing about, you know, most of the times when we blew out, or the most frequent time to blow out. Oh, series is my freaking Siri. Get out of here, Siri. Is that if we were going to blow out, it would be at about between 729 and 731 on the first Friday of the month. So then you blow out on that number and suddenly it's 7:30 in the morning and you aren't really allowed to stick around. You know, there's nothing more for you to do that day. So yeah, then you start a little
you go parade, to Billy Goat over on Wells.
Get an omelet and a bucket of Miller Lights and play some Golden Tee. Yeah.
Tom, the bartender at Ceres, was there at 6. So you're good to go.
Yeah, exactly. A can of V8 and a cup of vodka, and they call it a Bloody Mary.
That's right. The good old days.
I'll tell you, anyone out there, if you are ever in Chicago as a trader, being around this space, and you know, go to the Board of Trade, go to Ceres, and just experience it.
Yeah, stop by and let us know too if you're a friend of Hogue or something, because we have the office there now. So I think more of us are in there from time to time, and I've been itching. It's been a couple of years, I feel like, since I've been there. I think since like before the pandemic. So love to hit that up sometime. You guys should join.
I'll meet you. We'll take a day off.
There we go, Hogue.
Well, I got to run now, guys. So thank y'all for listening to us reminisce and set some expectations here for the recap / limit up. I will be back next week. We got Jared Tendler coming next Thursday at 10 a.m. Beyond that, the usual YouTube schedule. So hopefully our traders keep on doing well. And you have a nice rest of the week. Namaste and trade well, y'all.
The Limit Up Podcast is a presentation of Top Step. Check us out at topstep.com to learn more about our futures trading combine and how you can become a funded trader. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.